What's up, guys? This is Zach, and you have just stepped into the dark blue. I'm hanging out with Rowan King today, a poet from Australia that I actually met kind of by chance, a friend of mine in San Antonio who has recently got named the Poet Laureate of San Antonio, Texas. She ran across his stuff on Instagram and a challenge that she was doing. Rowan participated in the challenge that she had created, and lo and behold, here we are now talking to Rowan about some poetry. So he's actually got a blog post that he wrote on one of his poems about masculinity and growing up and all of that, and it's definitely worth checking out. You guys can go to the Real Guys Real Talk blog and read Rowan's post on that poem, and hopefully we'll get to hear that one today as well. How you doing today, Rowan?
Doing great. How you going?
Oh, I'm alive and well, man. Sunny and warm here in Seattle.
That must be nice.
Yeah, you guys just went into your winter, huh?
Yeah, fresh and in the cold months.
Yeah, it's kind of funny sitting here with you've got your beanie and flannel on, and I've got my shorts and short sleeve shirt on. So
yeah, in my survival wear. Yeah.
Yeah. That's some killer lighting you've got back there. What's that all about?
I just thought I'd switch the LED onto blue in the theme of the Into the Dark Blue podcast.
Right. Well, cool, man. So the reason I wanted to talk to you a bit more today is because, you know, I've really been intrigued by your poetry. I love your words, and I love the way that you put things together.
Thanks, man.
And I'm doing a short series here on creativity. So I started out talking to Owen from the Man Cove Wellbeing Instagram podcast, and we had a great episode about creativity and how it helps with our mental wellness, and talked a bit about why we started writing poetry and doing art and music and things like that. And so I wanted to bring some guys on the podcast like you, Rowan, who write and or create music or art or whatever it is, and just kind of get your perspective on why it's important for you.
Yeah, absolutely.
So would you mind starting out by telling us a little bit about your story? Like why did you start writing and what brought you where you are now?
Well, it's a short and a long story. I've always been fond of reading and writing. But being a bit of a shy kid growing up, I never really did much with that writing. Yeah. So I've always been into reading and writing. Like, I started reading at a very, very young age, because the only things I could find were my dad's sci-fi books and things like that. So I just had to learn fast. But I've never really done much with my writing growing up, because I wasn't very outgoing, a very confident person growing up. And this whole thing I've been doing with my poetry, my performing, my writing, putting myself out there, has only really taken off over the last less than a year, really.
Oh, wow. That's awesome.
Yeah. And it's been a bit of a blitz, actually, a bit of a shotgun. I did my first performance in August of last year.
That's amazing. And how old are you?
I'm actually 28 now.
So. Okay. Cool, man. Well, that's a great time to start. Keep going. Yeah, you're saying.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, they say it's the best time to plant a tree is 20 years ago, and the second best time is now. So better late than never.
That's great.
A lot had been going on in my life at that time, which we can get into later, but I just decided I need to do something radical, something scary, you know, they say about trying to scare yourself every day.
Yeah, right.
So I picked that to do, my very first time doing anything by myself in front of an audience.
And that's awesome.
It happened to be quite a big audience for my first time. I didn't expect that either.
Oh, wow. Like, how big?
big for me anyway at that time, which was more than one, so that's big. But it was the room had about 40 or 50 people in it.
Oh yeah, that's pretty significant, so, especially for your first time on stage.
Yeah, yeah. So it was a it wasn't any ordinary slam either. It was a slam poetry event, but it was for the Australian Poetry Slam. So they have heats, and then they have the state finals and then the national finals. So that was one of the heats there. I didn't place in that, though I met a lot of people there, and turns out they're all the heavy hitters in my state, and I had no idea because this is my first time.
The ones who have traveled from other cities and everything to be there.
Exactly,
Seriously, man.
In a capital city, so. But no, it was fantastic, and it was really humbling, and the people I met were just brilliant, and I might have given up that day from that experience if I had more of an ego. But one of the people I met there was really, really endearing to me, and at one point even asked to see my piece afterwards, and then read it back to me over a few drinks, and that was, yeah, I think because of that person. If it weren't for that person, I wouldn't have kept going.
That's awesome.
So I made amazing friends, and they're all incredibly talented. Little did I know, one of the people there was had been to the national finals twice and was going to be there for a third time.
That's cool. That's such a great network of people, man. Like, I've always had a similar experience in that community where people are just so friendly and welcoming and just really want to like get to know you, you know. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, absolutely. You don't really understand how much just putting yourself out there in little ways or in big ways like that really just expand your world.
Yeah, absolutely. So what happened next?
What happened next? So I decided to stick with it despite being very humbled by another placing, and went to another heat in a small town named Deloraine. And I met more people there, which is fantastic. And I ended up coming second in that heat with the same piece that I did.
Wow.
At the first heat. Had a bit more time to work on my stage presence and like gesturing and all of that.
Right, yeah. It takes time for sure.
Absolutely. And that was really exciting. And the local newspaper did an interview with the winners of that as well, which is nice. Cool. And that was a piece called Neon Genesis, which is a piece which was inspired by all the things that got me into doing the performance in the first place.
Oh wow! You're gonna do for us today?
I'm sure I could. Yeah.
Cool. I would love to hear what got you started, man. That's awesome.
Yeah. So in general, it was a piece about finding my like sense of pride and reconciling myself with, with things that have kept me from, being my best self, and learning to just throw away all the things that are holding me back, and learned, like, for lack of a better phrase, just how decent of a person that I am. So
yeah, okay,
I'm sure I could.
Cool, man.
Phrase that a lot better in a poem.
That's why we write, right? Because it's hard to speak. It's hard to say the things we want to say the right way. At least that's part of the reason I do it, because it helps me get those things off my chest in a way that I wouldn't be able to otherwise. So.
Yeah.
So would you mind doing that for us now?
Oh, sure. Let's
get it started with a piece. Why not?
Should know it off by heart by now. I've done it so many times, but best not test that.
I still miss a few lines from some of my favorite ones that I have performed in the past regularly. You know, it happens.
Oh, I missed a two lines out of my piece I did at the Opera House, and that luckily no one noticed, but I noticed.
Right. It's usually how it happens.
Okay, so... this piece is called Neon Genesis, which is just means new beginning. Lately, I've been really tough on myself. I've been trying to learn the bitter lesson that you can do everything right and still fail. I know, such a Debbie Downer, right? You see, I've been a hopeless romantic all my life. I roll Notting Hill around my molars, pick at the Princess Bride in my canines, and tongue at the Casablanca stuck on the roof of my mouth. But when I grew up, I did my best to put away these childish things. I swish, I rinse, and I spit out this language that doesn't exist in the real world. Full to the brim, adolescently intubated on love and ever afters, and with two fingers down the back of my own throat, I burst at the seams. I vomit up the manic pixie of my teenage dreams. And there, emerging from my naive cocoon, you found me. Still wet in a romantic idiocy, I hadn't had the time to dry off. Barely shook clean the dust, and just like that, you passed me by. A bellowing electrical storm, in the blink of an eye, you struck your lightning at my foundations. You swept me up in a tempest, like Mother Nature navigating her way through this rocky retrograde, you see me. My mind spins magnetic, panic. Panic darts my pupils manic, closing in we rapport like dancing, then recoil, like our fields just aren't made to touch. At least not here. And that's okay, they say. People can only meet you as far as they've met themselves. So when you're ready, you can meet me there. Meet me in the air, because someday, not far from now, I'll see myself for what I am. I tower as a street light, leering with garish glare, a factory line, serpentine, metropolite snare, craving illumination from my sedation. Peering out onto my new revelations, I will be my own monument. A totem pole with life's tolls, carving neogenesis from these bones to be again, wholly unwhole.
Nice. Man, I love that.
Thanks, man.
Yeah, it's a beautiful piece, man. Like, it's, I just, that kind of sense of self-realization or self-actualization in that, like, I could totally feel that, and that imagery in there is just like, man, just breath of fresh air, honestly. So
thanks, man. That means a lot.
Yeah, that's cool. So you've gone, over the last year, you've done quite a bit of this then, huh?
Yeah. From nothing to, pretty constant.
Yeah,
it's been a trip.
Cool. So what kind of stuff do you usually write about? What's some of your inspirations?
Well, being, you know, a straight white guy, it's generally I like to pick on my own kind, which there's plenty to pick on there.
Yeah, indeed.
a lot of holding myself accountable for things. Like, you know that I like to talk a lot about men's issues and problems, issues with mental health and self-esteem. Like, that comes up quite a lot in my pieces, usually in an arc with reconciliation, because I like to have that, because I feel like audiences really register with that.
Take away something positive. You know? Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I do the same thing with my poetry as well. I think it's really important to kind of like take a dark, difficult thing and turn it into something that's more, more positive. And yeah, that's definitely awesome. I love that.
Absolutely. It's incredibly important.
So do you have some specific things that kind of steer you in that direction, some experiences in your past that have really kind of impacted why you write about like masculinity, men's issues, and that sort of thing, and mental health?
Yeah, sure. I grew up in a very small rural country area. So a lot of the mindsets there are very small town mindsets, you know. Very close-minded people, and growing up, you know, being a bookish person, while at the same time being tall and athletic, which is a bit of a paradox in the country. I get subjected to a lot of bullying and things like that.
So, oh, okay, because you're not athletic.
No, I am. I am.
Oh, you are athletic. So okay.
It's, yeah, it's good. That kind of that dissonance of trying to fit in with an academic crowd as well as a sporting crowd. So you get to see both sides of the coin when it comes to masculinity in men.
Yeah, that's great. That's really interesting. Mm. Yeah, it's kind of interesting to me too how you mentioned the small town minds being closed-minded and that sort of thing, because it's very similar here. You know, you experience a lot of that here as well, and so it's kind of interesting to me that translates over to where you are, you know, completely on the other side of the world, and you have a similar experience and some kind of struggle with that, with people in that town that you grew up in. So continue.
Yeah. So there's that, of course. Again, like I said, I wasn't a part of any particular group, clique, niche. So while not being part of it, but also being involved in them, you become kind of a wallflower, you know, fly on the wall, be able to observe and take in and see all of these things happening. And you learn from it and you're able to adapt your worldview based on what's around you. Hopefully not taking too many toxic things in, but I'm sure that I have. Yeah, and I try to put that in something that can help people. Like you say, everything's so much better if you put that positive spin on it, if you put that that reconciliation, that redeeming arc at the end is
absolutely something
that really inspires my pieces.
That's cool. So would you be willing to share, did you want to share the one that you put in for the blog post?
Absolutely. I can do that one.
That'd be awesome. And this one, guys, this is the piece that really struck me that introduced me to Rowan is, reading just actually a short bit of this piece from Instagram. And then I was grateful enough that he sent me, the full version of that. And I just, it just hit me so hard because it's, it just speaks so loudly to me personally about growing up, as you were saying, a white dude, straight white dude, I connected to that in that aspect and some of the expectations surrounding that. So I'm pretty excited to hear this one.
Absolutely. This one's called Flodgerson. I think I explained it in the blog post as well, is that that's a, Flodgerson is this imaginary element that people thought was in everything, which is everything's potential to combust. And okay, obviously every scientist with half a brain at the time said that was ridiculous, but people still based their entire life views that everything had this magical combustible element inside of it. Mm. And I feel like that's really quite relatable to people's views on men. You know, boys will be boys. There's always going to be some type of combustible, violent, internal motivator in men. And that's not true at all. We don't have to be, you know, punching walls. We could be writing poetry.
Yes, absolutely.
So this one's called Phlogiston. When I first felt a fist to my face, the pain was ageless. A boy at war, his knuckles a sword, my teeth and ages. And I was told, yeah, your chin's gonna harden once the numbness sets in. Told to let that pain sink in, told male weakness is sin. And I was told, and I was told, and I was told that heroics in fashion, stoics in vogue. But how was I to know better when it's all a boy is ever sold? I cashed in my youth like scrap metal. Baby teeth for iron ingots, the freshly molded fool, where fighting fueled the furnace, forged me hot in numbness until my jaw became a fist too. Never letting rawness set in, no fretting over bloodletting, because in this shallow sea of masculinity, the rising fire would cauterize all wounds. I cut my teeth on the anvil until I cracked the crystalline in me. Hardness shattered in spittle and sparks. Sparks. Sparks that spat furies from the crucible, and where they fell sat freckles. And for the first moment, in stillness, I saw my softness. and in my skin it whispered, I forgive you. I opened my eyes once as a child, and the rest is remembering. I held the fire, and it burned in my hands, but I curled it, nurtured it, and turned it into the warmth that I needed as a man. Then, through softened ears, nature sung to me. At first with birds, then on the TV, screams of trees burnt for furnaces, fuel for men like me with iron in their blood. Blood lusting for earth's warm flesh in their teeth. When did we decide to look away from the fires? How many hits did it take to shift the make of our very fiber? We crystallize in calluses, cladding armors for that next fist. Love lost, life lost, all loss is hard. But you fight hardness with hardness, you get friction, and friction is a condition that positions us to set our walls alight. But I beg you, allow yourself the fear to feel, and you'll see that our softness is a right. So hold tight the fire in your skin.
Ah, that's so awesome. I love that. It's, yeah, like the one of the things that really I love, that there's one very simple line in there that I love, is that your jaw became a fist too.
Thanks.
And it's like, it says so much, because it's like there's this like image of strength in that, but also I think about how the more we get pummeled by like difficult things in life, the more bitter we become and the harsher our words become. And like, it's like the jaw being a fist as well is like the things we speak, you know, is what it kind of comes across to me as.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, glad someone's reading into the lines.
That's what poetry is all about though, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Nah, it's beautiful, man. Just holding that fire too. That's something that I think is so hard for us. And a lot of times, because like, you know, for me, I grew up and was kind of, I think, inadvertently taught that my role is to provide, you know, my role is to work, to just put a roof over our head, put food on the table, that kind of stuff. And that's something that I think it was traditionally taught, just, and not in a bad way, you know, it kind of, that mindset, I think, had me push out some of my passions and push them away and bury them down. And, you know, the fire in me at a certain point kind of died because I was working so hard to be a man. And so like, you know, I don't know, that really hits me, like holding your fire, you know, like you said at the end there. And that's that reminder that like, keep your passions going, strive for your passions, and do what makes you everything you are, you know. And that's what really makes me feel like I'm more of a man, is by withholding those passions, by keeping those passions close to me and letting the fire burn. So it's pretty cool, man.
Absolutely. That was, yeah, it's really good to hear that. Thank you.
Hey, check this out. If you haven't tried Sheath underwear yet, I can tell you from experience, it will change your life. It's got not one, but two pouches for your bits and pieces. It's basically like upgrading from a studio apartment to a two-bedroom house for your junk. I won't wear anything else at this point. I've replaced my entire underwear drawer with Sheath. So if you want to try it out for yourself, you can get 25% off by going to sheathunderwear.com and use promo code DARKBLUE, all caps, DARKBLUE.
Yeah, I mean, I think every guy remembers the first time they were, you know, they took a hit. You know, they say it's like everything goes according to plan, or everyone has a plan until you get punched. Yeah, and it's a really shocking moment. You remember it. You remember it vividly, or you completely forget about it.
Just black it out.
More often than not, I think so. So I thought that would be something that would really resonate with people just off the get-go. The first line is just, you know, fist to the face. And most people, unfortunately, know exactly what that feels like.
Just immediately invokes emotions.
Yeah, it just gets people hooked. Yeah, or at least people in country towns seem to know that a lot more.
Feisty ones, are they?
Oh, don't you know it? Yeah, so you hit the nail on the head there. It's just that there is this preconceived notion that men have this fire, but that the fire is to provide the hearth of a family, and simultaneously the fire is the one that burns everything that threatens it. And fire itself is like the, you know, kind of the crowning achievement of mankind, isn't it?
It's yep, absolutely.
It's the reason we're here, but it's not because we burnt everything. It's not because we tore everything down. It's because we gathered around it, we nurtured it, and we made something out of it that we could give to everyone.
Yeah.
And it's in that kind of that vein that I think that men should reflect on that kind of thing about themselves, about they do have this passion. Maybe it's anger. But any one of those passionate emotions can easily can be changed into something else. That whenever I got quite nervous up on stage performing, people would tell me this fact that anxiousness is just the exact same feeling as being excited.
Mm-hmm.
You just have to kind of change gears. And I feel like if you have that anger and that frustration and that negative fire, if you find some outlet, like care, like art, like poetry, writing, anything like that, then that fire that you have, that's such a dangerous thing, can be such a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
And that's why I wrote that.
That's cool, man. I love that. It's like it kind of takes the whole concept of man inventing fire. It just makes it whole completely different, because you know, you think of man inventing fire to being like a physical thing, you know, but if you put it in a metaphorical sense, like man inventing fire and nurturing the fire within each other, you know, I think it's a whole new spin on it, man, and I love that.
Yeah, I mean, that's the first place, that's the quintessential storytelling place, isn't it, around the fire?
Yeah,
that's where absolutely. We started the spoken word tradition, would have been around a campfire, you know, millions of years ago.
Yep, talking absolutely. About
the egg hunt or whatever. Yeah.
All those epic stories that are passed down over decades and generations. And it's very true. So, you've done some competitions and things like that, I assume,
over the, the past
year. Yeah. So what's your goal? Like, what are you kind of heading for? Do you have something in mind where you want to go with poetry?
Amazingly, surprising myself, I did hit a goal that I was going for. There was, I mentioned in, I was saying in Deloraine, that heat that I came second in,
mm-hmm.
Provided me a spot in the state finals here for the Australian Poetry Slam.
Sweet.
And I did the state finals, and there were a lot more people than there were in Deloraine there. At the Workers Club in Launceston, there were about somewhere over 100 people, which is
nice.
Which is pretty good.
Pretty good size room, yeah.
And terrifying. But terrifying things really open you up.
Yes, most definitely.
Which I've been finding more and more lately.
Yeah, it gives you a new perspective to just to put yourself through the difficult things. That's definitely for sure. So,
oh, absolutely. It's like the what they call the tourist. I forgot what the term is, but you know, you go to a new place and then it's something you've never seen before.
Culture shock.
Yeah, something like that. And your mind expands to fill in that experience, and just it's not the same as going to another country, but standing in front of a whole lot of people and bearing your soul to them in words.
Yeah.
Very, very honest writing is quite scary, and it definitely opened up a lot of room up there. So
that's awesome, man. Well, cool. So did you already compete in that, or is that something that you're waiting for after?
That's all said and done. So I competed there. That was, I think, 24 of the best poets in the state went to that one. And it was the top three, top two would go to the national finals, and the third would come along as a mentee poet. And as much to my surprise, I ended up actually winning that.
Nice, man. Congratulations.
Thank you. At the time, it was a complete shock and terrifying because I'd only been doing performance poetry, slam poetry for 4 weeks, maybe.
Wow, that's amazing.
It was wild. Yeah,
poetry prodigy.
Oh, fingers crossed. <huh? laughs> So that was a goal, and my next goal, my goal at the beginning of this was pretty lofty. But I thought, well, you know, if I get it, that'd be awesome. But if I don't get it, you know, shit happens. But I wanted to win it all. I wanted to go to the national finals. I didn't really set anything past the national finals because I thought that's enough. That's all I wanted to do. I had a few things in mind. I thought, you know, I could tell all of my musical friends, like, oh, well, I performed somewhere that you haven't, so up at the opera house.
Yeah,
which is terrible of me to say, but it's funny.
No, it is. That's funny. That's great. So it sounds like you performed at the opera house. I think you made reference to it earlier.
Absolutely. So that gave me a free ticket up to Sydney, up to the country's capital. Set up as a nice little house in the rocks for a few days. Got to hear from a lot of poets, actually some poets from America as well. Desiree Della Giacomo came down. She's one of the button poets. She's amazing.
Awesome. I love button poetry. They've got some good stuff on there, man.
Yeah, it was really great. And we got to see the New South Wales, like the Sydney and the New South Wales finals. They have it one night after the other. It's insane. Don't know how they do it.
Awesome.
And those people go to compete against me in the finals. And so after doing all that on the Sunday night, went up and did my piece in front of I don't know how many people because the lights were very bright. I couldn't see a thing.
It was probably apparently a good thing at that point.
yeah. Absolute blessing. Didn't want to focus too much, but apparently a couple hundred were there at least, so that's wild.
Nice.
Which is a couple hundred more than I'd ever done.
Indeed.
So I did my piece up there, and my friend Andy, who I mentioned before, had been there twice before, came there with me, and it was beautiful. Everyone bonding backstage, and just a lot of
camaraderie.
It's hard to put into words. It's a really great experience.
That's awesome. So how'd that one turn out? Did you come away with some winnings or?
No. I did have a piece ready to go, a kind of formulaic, you know, judge impressing piece. And then when I got up there, I just kind of humbled by everyone that was there. Again, I'm always being humbled. I'm a humble sponge. I decided pretty much on the spot that I wouldn't do that one because it felt insincere, and I just did a piece that was important to me.
Oh, cool.
And just, you know, got it out there on a big stage, and it didn't score as well as my other one might have, but at the time I didn't really mind. I was, you know, on cloud nine. I was performing poetry at the Opera House within the first month of ever being on a stage. So
wow, that's so phenomenal, man. Like, yeah, and to come away from with that experience, like, I mean, all it can do is just drive you forward from there on out.
Absolutely,
you know.
Yeah.
So do you plan on doing any publishing or anything like that?
I mean, I need to be a lot more prolific with my writing and to get anything out publish wise which it'd be fantastic. Like, I love writing, but I need a bit of a bigger repertoire. Since that, it's opened me up to a lot of events. People I performed at last. We had this Party in the Paddock Festival. I performed at last one of those we ever had here.
Cool.
I did an event for trying to raise money for Movember.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. That was really good. I had a whole set full of very similar kind of pieces to what I perform here, which is great.
Yeah, actually, I've been working with a Movember representative up here in Seattle, too. So they're a great, great organization. Yeah.
Yeah, our local barbershop team, we raised about, it was like $3,500 or something.
Wow.
So that was fantastic. That's
wonderful.
I got about $500 from that night alone. So
that's cool, man.
Yeah.
So how do you feel about doing one more poem for us before we go?
Oh, how much you got on you?
I got a couple bucks I can Venmo you.
I'm sure the exchange rate is really good. Actually, that'd be great.
Have a beer.
I can do that for you. Alrighty. So this one's called, it's quite a long title, but I'm a Stag for My Friends. Confession. I'm a serial people pleaser. I can't help it. I'm a serial people pleaser. But I've learned that the reason for this, it stems deeper. It's a response to trauma that they call fawning, which means averse to violence, the silences, deviance, wallowing, and mourning. I just push to placate and satisfy everyone in my life. See, right now the world is cruel, and life can be too. You all can see this. But in times like these, I quote my own personal Jesus, Keanu Reeves, and he says this: I don't want to be part of a world where kindness is weakness, and I live by this. See, I am the terrible, typical softy type to stop and stand while the group troops on for you to tie your shoes back on, because no one that I love should ever feel alone. No, not for a moment. Because, see, I have friends whose roads have steered to very different ends, where twists pass, spun by dead men's hands and those living free still, or even the machinations born and burrowed into their own being. And kids like me, people like me, are just so lucky to be here today. Because so many of them scorch the world in their wake when they think they're leaving it in that T.S. Eliot way, but they're just absent for the bang, where we foot the fallout for those men who stow their ghosts inside their heads. When the thing that really haunts us are the thoughts of the lives they could have led, but I'm the lucky one. Though the past is never just said and done, I let go. I shared that weight, and the dawning of each day, I forced myself to reinforce myself with this. I surrendered to kindness, to honesty, and openness. I did. I took the hands that reached for me, and I climbed free. Because I'm not what it made me. There's just too much light in the world to let my shadow ever tower over me, but listen closely. This is how it was for me. This is just how my story is told. But for others, the light at the peak of that hole can seem as an illusion. That disc of distant hope, a halo of delusion, and the help we hand down fans out in a myopia like a rope of smoke to you. And I know and hold those close who've climbed out with much worse than dirt under their fingernails. But no one gets out clean. I mean, who are we really? Who are we to see what latches on and leeches off the heart of each of us? But how lucky we can be to have friends like these, those that can sympathize, empathize, energize us with just a genuine light in their eyes that save our souls, that see us satiated, that patiently wait while we inevitably dissociate, just the security in the safety of knowing that when the light in you dims down and the exit might seem to you so far now, there will always be someone about to pull you back out. So please, please, just reach out.
Damn. All right. Well, you picked a really solid piece to end on there, man. So that's like exactly what we're all about, like, is building that community that you're talking about. And I'm so glad that you read that piece to wrap up, because it just connects so much with Into the Dark Blue and what we're all about too, man. It's all about that, like, creating that community and having those people close to you who just really keep you in line and keep you motivated and keep you going. And there's also nothing wrong with a little wisdom from the great Keanu Reeves. So
never.
So, but man, I want to thank you so much for sharing your poetry with us, being willing to come on here and tell everybody what you're all about. I appreciate it.
Thanks, man. Always good to spill a bit from the Gospel of Keanu for the fans. Maybe that's the title of the book, Gospel of Keanu.
That's also a good call. So I got to ask you one last question before we wrap up. If you could summarize in one sentence why you write poetry, what would you say?
Put me on the spot, huh?
Yeah, that's the idea.
If not to hear my own voice, but for people to hear theirs in mine would be my reason. Mm-hmm.
That'll do. That's really good. That's that'll do, huh? That's a much more profound response than I was expecting, but granted, I don't know what I was expecting, but but yeah, so if not to hear your own voice, but for other people to hear their voice in yours. I love that.
That's it.
You need to write that down somewhere. That should be your like tagline for your poetry.
Oh, that is my number one tip. I have a notebook at all times. The memory is a sieve.
I hear you. Yeah, I think one of my earlier poetry readings that I went to, I was sitting watching some of the other poets, and somebody was like, I guess had an idea they wanted to write down, and they were like, hey, does anybody have a pen? And literally not one poet in the room had a pen. And I was like, you know, I feel like there's something wrong with that in a room full of poets and nobody has a pen. And this was before like cell phones and everything were so prominent, you know, and just like our main source of keeping track of things. So from that day on, I actually started keeping a pen in my back pocket everywhere I go. And just kind of started that little tradition for me, but, or habit, I guess.
That's what I was talking to an American poet the other day, and he said that in Baltimore they have a saying which is "take my pen," which is if someone says something that's just so brilliant that they've said everything that needs to be said, it's like "take my pen," like there's no need for me to write anymore. You've said it,
yeah. Kind of
thing, which is brilliant.
That's great. I love that.
Should adopt that one where you are.
Yeah, well,
get everyone to have a pen in their back pocket or a couple.
Right, I'll just pass them out at the door as people come in when they do an event.
Throw them gently. Yeah, right.
But that's really cool, man. So do you have any final thoughts before we wrap up?
I think we've covered quite a lot, which is great. I mean, yeah, if anyone listening feels like reaching out and asking me anything else, I'm sure they can find all of my socials easy enough.
Sounds good. Yeah, can you actually tell people where they can find you?
Absolutely. So my poetry page at the moment, it's pretty fresh, is at Vocust, which is VOCUSSED on Instagram. And if you want to follow my personal account as well, it's Scam Poetry, which is, I should have kept that one for the poetry account, but
that's pretty great. Scam Poetry. You could transfer all your stuff over and use that, man. It's pretty solid.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Hit me up anytime.
Cool. So yep, that's awesome. Down in where you're from, in Australia, I guess you're not doing any events right now, I assume.
No, it's all online. Yeah.
Cool. Well, definitely if you have any online events happening, feel free to send them my way. I would love to post them on our story so people can go check them out, man.
Absolutely. Thank you. I'll do that. Yeah,
totally. Outside of that, man, I want to thank you so much. I want to encourage you to connect with your creativity. It's something that I think is really important. Just like Rowan was saying, like if we convert that negative energy into something positive, we can do so many great things. in this world. And so I want to encourage you guys to figure out your creative outlet, whether it's poetry or music or even just like coming up with a new business that might help people out, help make people's lives better. Find that sense of creativity and what you connect with the most, something that you have a passion and a fire for. Get out there and just do it, you know, convert that negative energy into positive energy.
Absolutely. What do I say? Hold tight the fire, right?
Yes. Hold tight the fire. Indeed. I think actually my title, the episode, Hold Tight the Fire.
It's a good one. I should write it down.
Sounds like a good book name too. I don't know. Just saying. Anyway, thanks a lot for joining me, man. I appreciate it. And cheers.
No worries. It was great. Have fun with your American summer.
Ah, thanks. And hopefully you get to do some snowboarding or something around there in Australia.
That'd be nice.
I want to thank you for venturing into the dark blue with us today, where we're always striving to foster a community of peers which empowers mental wellness, positive growth, and social awareness. If you like what we're doing and would like to support our community, you can purchase a pint glass or t-shirt from Sheath Underwear via the link on our merch tab at www.intothedarkblue.com or message us to make a one-time donation. All proceeds go to men's mental wellness initiatives. If you ever need a listening ear, feel free to message us on the website or at into_the_darkblue on Instagram. If you have an emergency or need help from a professional therapist, we offer several resources on our Get Help page. Last but not least, know your limits and drink smart. Cheers.